It's Monday, March 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, we remember an influential First Lady who has died. Meanwhile, the next occupant of the White House remains a heated question.
Those chemicals actually absorb through the skin very rapidly, so they go in circulation and they go all over the body, and that's one thing you don't want.
Smoking can be very dangerous long after you quit. Also ahead, some of the all-time best in pop music are being honored. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Former First Lady Nancy Reagan, the steadfast partner of the 40th U.S. President Ronald Reagan, died Sunday of congestive heart failure. That, according to the Reagan Library. She was 94 years old. She will be buried beside her husband at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. Touching tributes have been pouring in for the former First Lady. The executive director of the Reagan Foundation, John Heibusch, spoke about his reaction to the passing of Nancy Reagan with my colleague, Michael Lippin.
No doubt everyone here is about as sad as it gets. We worked very, very closely with Mrs. Reagan for many years, and she was our leader and our inspiration. So to have lost her overnight as we did, it's a terrible thing, and something that we just have to live with. But we've also planned for, and so now we need to move on and have her buried next to President Reagan, as was the plan, and then move on with the work of the President's Foundation.
How did you get to know Nancy Reagan yourself?
Well, I certainly knew her from afar when I worked on Capitol Hill during the Reagan administration, and I had met her on a couple of occasions, just in passing sort of meetings during his presidency. But then Mrs. Reagan called me when they were searching for someone to run the Reagan Foundation and Library about 6 years ago, and I had a great talk with her over the phone, and then interviewed with her directly, and so ever since then, it's history. I spent a lot of time working very closely with her. She's on our board of trustees, and had a great deal to say with how the foundation and library was run.
Well, how active was she in her final years with the foundation?
Yeah, very active. I'd say in the past year, her activity trailed off somewhat as her. As her health began to fail her. But up until the very end, she was with us 110% mentally. She had all her mental faculties about her. So behind the scenes, for the last several years, she's attended all of the foundation's board meetings and been very much a part of our decision-making process for important matters. So she's been very involved.
Well, looking back at her time as First Lady in the 1980s, what would you say about the influence she had during the presidency of Ronald Reagan?
You know, I don't think President Reagan could have succeeded as much as he did without having this incredibly strong and supportive pillar, standing by him at every moment of the day. They just had such an incredibly close relationship, and I think the president would have been a bit adrift if Nancy had not been part of his life so much so. And as a result, I think the nation owes her somewhat of a debt of gratitude for being there for him and for being his strong right arm, and also for being the one that took care of him at his bedside for 10 years when he had to succumb to Alzheimer's. That was a really, really difficult assignment, but something she took on with great love and great compassion.
John Heibusch, the executive director of the Reagan Foundation. Well, up next, we have our social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, here in the studio to check the public's pulse on our top story. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
So, how big is the story on Twitter?
As you can imagine, it's quite big, and it's also featured in the Moments section, which is a relatively new tool on Twitter. It's basically a gallery of curated tweets, so you don't have to go through like different accounts or use different hashtags to find the general sentiment on a story. And the first tweet on the Moments page is one by Pete Souza at Pete Souza, and he was the White House photographer during his administration. He wrote, "Rest in peace, Nancy Reagan. A couple of photos from when I was official White House photographer for President Reagan." And he shared two photos of the couple hugging each other, one in a ranch and another one in which President Reagan is dressed as Santa Claus with his wife on his lap. Very cute. More than 1,300 people liked that tweet, and one Twitter user replied, "Politics aside, it was a love story." A lot of people wanted to know how many presidents Souza has worked with and how long he has worked at the White House.
Oh, did he respond to that?
No, he didn't, but I do have the answers. He worked with President Reagan from 1983 through 1989 and has been photographing President Obama since 2009.
Well, I'm sure there are many dignitaries who have been tweeting about her death.
Oh, absolutely. But first, let's read a tweet from a family member. Her stepson, Michael Reagan, at Reagan World, tweeted this. "I am saddened by the passing of my stepmother, Nancy Reagan. She's once again with a man she loved. God bless." He also wrote, "Nancy is where she has always wanted to be with her Ronnie. Now she's at peace."
What are some of the reactions from the presidential contenders?
So everyone still in the running tweeted about her passing away. And on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton tweeted, "Nancy's advocacy work for Alzheimer's research was tireless." And Bernie Sanders wrote, "This is a sad day for America, and she will be dearly missed." On the GOP side, Donald Trump wrote, "She was a wife of a truly great president." And Marco Rubio wrote, "She was a true example of integrity and grace." That's all for me today.
Well, the Republicans certainly have always pointed to Ronald Reagan since his term in office, and we acknowledge the passing of Nancy Reagan. Thank you so much for that wrap-up, G. She's on our Twitter account, or rather, she has her own Twitter account, at G. Abby Lee. I'm on Twitter, at VOA Stevenson. And yes, we are both on the International Edition account. That is at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. The contests for the Republican and Democratic U.S. presidential nominations are far from over, with not quite half of the 50 states having picked delegates to the party's national nominating conventions that take place in July. Key primary election and caucus contests are scheduled in the coming weeks. March 15th is a key date on the campaign calendar as we continue along the road to the White House. Here's where both parties stand at the moment. After Saturday's voting in five states, a total of 2,383 delegates is needed to secure the Democrat Party's nomination. And we find the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has collected nearly half of that total, leading her lone opponent, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Among the Republicans, billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump, a political novice, continues to lead that field, which has been winnowed down from 17 original candidates. Trump has won victories in 12 states, Texas Senator Ted Cruz with six, and Florida Senator Marco Rubio with one. The winners of the two parties' nomination contest will face each other in November's national election, and that is to pick the successor to President Barack Obama. Many Republicans are still trying to figure out if Donald Trump is good or bad for their party. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman isn't certain either, but he joins us to discuss Trump after a very coarse candidate debate before Saturday's voting.
Well, Jim, in the week since we last spoke, a number of things have happened. Hillary Clinton has increased her delegate lead over Bernie Sanders for the Democratic nomination. Ted Cruz has emerged as sort of the anti-Trump candidate and consolidated himself as the choice for people who don't want to vote for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has reassured the nation about the size of his manhood. What a week.
Amazing. I don't think we could have predicted this or written this if we were trying to come up with a novel about Washington.
You know, there was this moment where Senator Marco Rubio, a Republican, who up until now has run a campaign very much on the issues, decided that he was going to take on Donald Trump on his own terms. And he launched into various attacks on Donald Trump, including the size of his hands, and made a suggestion that that indicated issues elsewhere on his body. And Donald Trump could not resist the temptation to come back in a nationally televised Republican debate, standing at the podium, to assure the nation that everything was fine on that particular subject. It was truly a first for the nation.
And a moment to get the kids out of the room. I mean, most of the time we don't think of presidential debates going in these tangential directions, if you will.
Indeed. But there are actual developments in this race. Bernie Sanders' path to the nomination looks very narrow, bleak, and disappearing rapidly. Hillary Clinton has won all of the big primary states, most recently Louisiana, but before then Texas. And it's just hard to see at this point, unless Bernie Sanders is able to run the table on all non-Southern states from here on, it's hard to see how he overtakes her. Marco Rubio, who was thought to be Hillary Clinton's strongest challenger in the general election, really has not caught fire. But his rival, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, has really picked up in the midst of what is a very fluid Republican presidential contest.
And we see the establishment, if you will, of the Republican Party trying to go against this movement of Donald Trump.
Jim, clearly there's a lot of anger in the country. And for a certain sector of the electorate, Trump seems to have tapped into that. But you're right. And up until now, he's really defied the laws of physics. I mean, he seems to have this anti-gravity belt, which has kept him afloat despite multiple shaky debate performances, multiple things uttered that would sink any other candidate in any other presidential year. But perhaps on Saturday, we got some sign that the anti-gravity belt may be sputtering just a little bit. Ted Cruz won the caucuses in Maine. He won the caucus in Kansas. And he came very close to upsetting Donald Trump in both Kentucky and Louisiana. It looks right now as though Ted Cruz has that ability to pull some of Trump's supporters away, as well as to pick up those who had been favoring Marco Rubio and John Kasich until recently. And let's just face it, neither of them are getting traction. And the further along we go, the less likely their success looks, and the more some of their supporters may be tempted to go for someone who has a brighter prospect.
We always nominate the candidate of sanity in this room, Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim.
Little doubt exists that smoking is bad for you, as is breathing in smoke from someone else's cigarette. But new research shows that long after the cigarette is put out, smoking can still be dangerous. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Cigarette smoking increases the risk of cancer and heart disease in smokers. People who don't smoke but are exposed to cigarette fumes are also at increased risk for lung cancer. Now researchers are studying the effects of so-called third-hand smoke. Manuela Martins-Green is a cell biologist at the University of California, Riverside.
Third-hand smoke is the accumulation of second-hand smoke on the environmental surfaces. So as the smoke is coming out of the end of the cigarette, it's then depositing on the sofas, the carpets, the clothing, the hair, all the surfaces of your, even if it's wood, and is also accumulating not just in the homes, in the cars as well.
Martins Green says young children are at particular risk for contact with third-hand smoke as they crawl along the carpet and put their hands in their mouths. And it's not a threat just in homes and cars. Those toxic fumes can spread through ventilation systems if there are smokers elsewhere in the building. Martins Green and her colleagues discovered that cigarette residues are easily absorbed into the body.
And those chemicals actually absorb through the skin very rapidly, so they go in circulation and they go all over the body, and that's one thing you don't want.
Researchers studied the effects of third-hand smoke on mice using smoke machines in the enclosures to simulate secondhand smoke. They found the first signs of a health problem in the animals' livers, an increase in lipids or fat seen in people with prediabetes. They then measured the amount of glucose or blood sugar in the mice and found that it too was elevated, as were levels of insulin, a hormone used by the body to convert glucose into energy. Through exposure to the toxic chemicals in third-hand smoke, the mice had developed insulin resistance, a precursor to type 2 diabetes. Martins Green is now leading an effort to look for a link between third-hand smoke and liver damage. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Pop music lovers may be very familiar with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that's in Cleveland, Ohio. I've been there. If you have a chance, go. It's a lot of fun. But there's another equally prestigious shrine that's in New York, and it's about to open its doors to new inductees, as we hear from VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald. We're going to be talking about the Songwriters Hall of Fame. That's pretty exciting.
Well, I attended the opening of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland back in 1995, and that's when people talk about music halls of fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame sort of springs to mind. Mm-hmm. But the Songwriters Hall of Fame has actually been around longer. It's been around since 1969. Songwriters Hall of Fame has a long and distinguished history, and this week they announced their 2016 inductees, who are Elvis Costello, Marvin Gaye, Tom Petty, the team of Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards, and Chip Taylor. We'll take them one at a time.
All right,
Elvis, let's go. Costello came in during the height of the punk rock movement, but he quickly proved himself much more versatile and wide-ranging than that. He's been making records since 1977. He has worked with Paul McCartney. He's worked with String Quartet. He'd recently released his memoirs. He's a very erudite man, and he's getting recognition as one of the premier songwriters of the modern era. Marvin Gaye was Motown royalty in the 1960s, and he later left Motown for CBS. Tragically, he was shot by his own father in 1984. Tom Petty has been one of America's leading rock and rollers since the mid-1970s. Both as a member of the Heartbreakers and as a member of the Traveling Wilburys and as a solo artist. Nile Rodgers and Bernard Edwards were the masterminds behind the disco-funk band Chic, which proved very, very influential in the late 1970s. And Nile was a huge producer in the 1980s, and he recently resurfaced a few years ago with Pharrell in the hit single Get Lucky. Nile is still very much active. And then there's Chip Taylor. Now, back in the 1960s, Chip wrote two of the biggest hit singles of the past half century. Wild Thing, made famous by the Troggs, and Angel of the Morning by Merrily Rush. And you can't, I can't think of two songs that were more different, but that shows his versatility. And his songs have been covered by everyone from Aretha Franklin to Johnny Cash. These songwriters are receiving their recognition at the 47th Annual Induction Dinner. It takes place at the Marriott Marquis Hotel in New York City on June 9th. And a press release said additional special award honorees will be announced soon.
Starting in the late 60s, my goodness, that was a time when songwriting was really big for a lot of artists.
There was a premium on innovation and risk-taking, and that's why you see so many great songwriters growing out of that era. But of course, there are great songwriters and producers working right now, and as time passes, we'll probably see them coming into the Songwriters Hall of Fame as well, because one of the activities of the Hall is to nurture up-and-coming songwriters.
Prominent in our own Hall of Fame is our VOA Top 20 Countdown host, Ray McDonald. He's also very prominent on Twitter, too. Follow him.
Ray on the hits.
Thanks
Drop
so much.
By. Say hi.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
You've been listening to International Edition. You can always find us at our website. That's voanews.com. We're also on Twitter. Follow our stream at VOA_IE. And we're even on Facebook. VOA Asia is the place to go. Thanks to all of our VOA Asia viewers who joined part of our program. They actually saw what was happening behind the scenes. You can too. Just follow us on VOA Asia. Our director is Tracy Carter. Engineer Daryl Smith there in the Batcave. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Thanks for joining us. We hope you come back and visit again. Have a super day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United Nations Security Council has unanimously adopted a resolution imposing tough new sanctions on North Korea in response to its recent nuclear test and launch using ballistic missile technology. The resolution puts in place the strongest sanctions imposed by the Security Council in more than two decades. I welcome this resolution as a firm, united, and appropriate response by the international community to the DPRK's recent provocations that flagrantly violated multiple Security Council resolutions, said President Barack Obama in a statement. These sanctions build significantly on the Council's previous actions aimed at North Korea's nuclear and ballistic programs and add far greater costs to the North Korean leadership and military by imposing new, stronger sanctions in other areas. The resolution subjects all cargo going into and out of North Korea to mandatory inspection and bans transfers of aviation fuel to the DPRK. It also limits and in some instances bans North Korea's exports of specific natural resources, making it tougher for the regime to obtain the financial resources it needs to keep funding its illicit weapons programs. It obligates countries to shut down DPRK financial institutions in their territory and to expel North Korean representatives engaged in abusing diplomatic privilege to conduct illicit activities. The resolution also bans North Koreans from receiving training abroad that could further the DPRK's nuclear and ballistic missile programs. U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Samantha Power, stressed that the resolution is not intended to punish the North Korean people, who have already suffered greatly under one of the most brutal regimes in the world.
The DPRK's abysmal human rights record is another reason we have taken steps to ensure the sanctions contained in this resolution specifically target the government, which carries out these grave abuses with impunity.
For more than a decade, North Korea has continued to move toward its declared goal of developing intercontinental ballistic missiles armed with nuclear weapons. The international community, speaking with one voice, has sent Pyongyang a simple message, said President Obama. North Korea must abandon these dangerous programs and choose a better path for its people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.